This is the first lecture in a series of four lectures given by Dr. Wayne Oates for a religious education workshop on Southeastern campus beginning the evening of the 28th of January, 1963. The topic is persons, personages, and people.
I'm very grateful for the opportunity to come and to think with you on this very important subject. It is an unusually happy occasion for me for the simple reason that this part of the country is very, very dear to me. The basic decisions of my life, vocational, were made here. I found my wonderful wife here, and I even went to the extent of being an educational director in this general territory, where I was an educational director at the Grace Baptist Church in Durham, North Carolina. And I suppose that's my only qualification for speaking to such a wonderfully disciplined group as you are, and I'm sure I shall learn far more about religious education and certainly church music than I impart. I bring you greetings from the Southern Baptist Seminary in Louisville, and especially from the members of the music faculty and the School of Religious Education faculty. They asked me in specific detail to greet many of you, and I do so generally now and will be conveying messages to you all during our time together. I chose the subject for tonight, persons, personages, because when we come to our basic theme of working with people, we need first of all a perspective of what people are like. We move in relationship to persons on certain unspoken assumptions about them, which are often unexamined, undefined, and inarticulate assumptions. Many times these assumptions will be clear and pure and crystal in terms of their nobility of purpose, and many times quite apart from our will and our desire, these assumptions will be cynical ones. They will be tawdry ones. And we wonder why our work with people is not a happy work. And it might be because we have never really examined our underlying assumptions about people. So one of the very first things we want to do in this lecture is to develop some working assumptions about persons, personages, and people with whom we work. Because these three are not the same. Persons are different from personages. And persons and personages are different from people. Possibly we will decide to change some of our assumptions and to strengthen other assumptions when we begin to look at these things closely. But in a mood of meditation, let's do what changing needs to be done with courage. And the things you say to yourself here these 3 days will be far more important than the things that I say to you. Because in this very situation in which you and I are communicating now, You and I are at one and the same time persons, personages, and people to each other. So in the first place, let's look at what a person is. What is a person? There are two ways of defining a term. One of them is to give an abstract dictionary definition. The other is to give a concrete functional definition. I'll give you an example of what I mean. Mrs. Oates and I were driving on our way here during day before yesterday, and we stopped at a service station in Bristol and asked an obviously uneducated and untutored service station attendant if he knew where 11W was. He says, 11W, and peered through the misty flats at us, and we said, yes, 11W. He said, I don't know where that is. And then my wife said, well, could you tell us how we could get out of Bristol and go to Wytheville? Oh, yeah, sure. You take that road there, and he showed us where 11W was. You see, he had a functional definition of that highway, but he didn't have an abstract definition. And so I would lean in the direction of functional definitions. And when we start looking at a person and ask what he is, what is a person, we must see him first in relation to God. And some of the people who interpret the New Testament so meaningfully to me have said to me that there are two kinds of persons in the New Testament. One is the person who lives in the solidarity of his creation as a human being, but he lives apart from God. And the other is a person who lives in this same solidarity with the same creation as a human being, but he lives as being made for God, in fellowship with God. Both of these persons have a common capacity, and that is that they are able to distinguish themselves from themselves. They are able to stand off and look at themselves to greater or less extent. And this is one of the characteristics that separates a person from other living beings. It's the capacity to stand off and see yourself. I shall never forget where I first learned that I could do this. I was in the second grade. We were playing on the playground at recess, and I noticed some children jumping a rope, and I noticed that I could notice my own thought processes. And this was a wonderful discovery to me, that I had the ability to watch myself think. And that I couldn't stop myself from doing this. That at all times, I was either thinking or thinking about not thinking. A little boy. And this is no child prodigy. This happens to all children in greater or lesser degree. They discover that they have an interior selfhood. A little 3-year-old lying on his bed closes his eyes and senses that it's dark on the inside of his head and yells extremely loudly that it is dark in here. He has discovered the interior and the exterior of what Wicks has called the inner world. So a person, whether he is in relation to God or in estrangement from God, nevertheless is an encounter with himself. This marks him off as a person. Now when we see a person again in relation to things like a table, a chair, we can get another functional definition or understanding of a person. Immanuel Kant defined a person in this way. He said, everything in creation can be used by man as a means to an end. But man himself is an end in himself. He is the subject and not the object of the moral law. Now, it seems to me that Kant has his finger here on a definite characteristic of persons, that we defy the fate of being treated as things. We are not checkers on a board to be moved. We are not commodities to be traded in. We are not toys to be played with. We are not instruments to be strummed upon. We will always, sooner or later, in one way or another, rise up and thrust off any attempt to use us as a thing. Now, Berdyaev has also said a similar thing when he said that man has that autonomous validity in himself which always prevents him from being converted into a means. He is an end within himself. Now then, when you relate us to things, you see what a person is, that he is not a thing. He is not a means. He is not a tool. He is a person, an end within himself. He uses tools but defies the fate of becoming one. Now, I think this is basic in understanding what a person is. Now let's look at our understanding of a person in relation to other persons. We could define a person as being that living organism which is different from other persons, which has his own inner individuality, his own humanity, his own imperfection, his own weakness, his own strength. And this is who he is. And in this sense, he is different from any other creation, any other creature on God's earth. And you say, well, how about brothers and sisters? But no two children are born into the same family. My two sons, 1 15, 1 9. The 15-year-older for 5.5 years was an only child. The 9-year-older will never have that experience. The 15-year-older will never be a youngest child. The 15-year-older was born to parents who were 6 years, 5.5 years younger at the time of his birth than they were at the time of the 9-year-older's birth. They were not the same parents. They were not completely different, I hope, but they were not completely the same either. And so God, in creating human personality, creates us with a uniqueness and an individuality in relation to each other that is as unique as our fingerprints. And this is our individuality. This is our frame of reference. And if you would work with a person, you must discover that. You must discover that which is in him, which is not in other people, which is uniquely his frame of reference. You must participate in his worldview and see himself, as Heidegger has said, from within himself as he sees himself from within himself. This is a self-emptying process. It's a kenosis in working with people. And you see how your principle of working with people is always shaped around the hand. Your technique of working with people is always shaped around the hand of your principle of understanding people, never vice versa. Now, each person, as Isaiah tells us, has his own particular way of separating himself from the rest of the flock of humankind. Each one of us parts to his own way. Each one of us is different in this way. I was on a panel once with a Hebrew rabbi, and he told one member of the group raised up during the discussion and said, what does that passage mean when it says, bring up a child in the way that he shall go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it? And the Hebrew rabbi signaled fair catch to me and to a Catholic priest and said, let me tell you what the Hebrew says. And we waited patiently, and he said, the Hebrew really says, bring up each particular child in his own particular way, and when he is old, he will be who he is. He will be that. Now, each one of us has his own particular way of putting distance or separation between himself and other people. This may be a helpful thing, it may be a harmful thing. I'm simply describing it here. But our way of dealing with him must be shaped and fashioned in terms of his way of maintaining his inner privacy, what someone is now calling psychic space. This difficulty is doubled by the fact that we ourselves, in dealing with him, have our own particular ways of keeping our distance from him, of maintaining our distance machinery full time from people, of insulating ourselves, as it were, from people, because this is a very threatening experience to encounter another human being. Meaningfully and in depth. Now, one way of looking at this is to go into the New Testament and find a certain word for person or personality. It's not an easy translation, because actually you don't find the word personality as such to be a New Testament word. But there are some words that help us with this, and one of them is prosopon, P-R-O-S-O-P-O-N, if you want to transliterate it. It's the word that is quite often translated face in the New Testament. You find an excellent example of it in Luke 9:51, where Jesus is said to set his face steadfastly toward Jerusalem, to set his face as hard as a flint toward Jerusalem. Here he separated himself even from Simon Peter. and became that lonely one in his redemptive task for you and me. And in all great reaches of personality, there is a tremendous amount of loneliness. I suppose this is why someone has said that religion is what a person does with his solitude, with his apartness. And Jesus separated himself and set his face as steadfastly as a flint to go to Jerusalem. It was determination and purpose. Also, you find this word in the encounter of the Apostle Paul with the Apostle Peter about their dispute about the Gentiles, eating with the Gentiles. In Galatians 2:11, you find it. You don't find just one word. It's prosopon, prosopon. Paul says that he went to him face to face. He encountered him directly. And here you see the dimension of personality in relation to others and Jesus as being characterized by high purpose and meaningful decision. And on the other hand, you see it in Paul and Peter as being characterized by face-to-faceness, by encounter, by over-againstness in relation to each other. Now, there are two other meanings of this word in the New Testament that are not so complementary. And they tap into a Roman understanding of personality. You find one of them in Matthew 6:16, in which Jesus says the Pharisees disfigure their faces when they fast. They put up an appearance of great sacrifice and disfigure their faces when they fast. Be not as they are. And then Paul in 2 Corinthians, the 5th chapter and the 12th verse, picks up another facet of this same meaning. He says, "We are not commending to you ourselves to you again, but giving you cause to be proud of us, so that you may be able to answer those who pride themselves on a man's position and not on his heart." And that word position, as it's translated in the Revised Standard Version, is the same word for face. Here are men who pride themselves on the front that they have been able to develop, their position, and not on their heart. And here we enter into the meaning of the word personage. And this is why I chose the word personage. And these two passages of Scripture here, in Matthew 6:16 and 2 Corinthians 5:12, give us a nice transition from an understanding of persons as persons over to an understanding of the personages, the positions that people hold, the stances they take, the faces they wear, the mask they live behind. This is where the word personality came from. It came from a Latin word, a dramatic word, persona, used even earlier by the Greeks, meaning the mask that people wear when they play a part or a role in a dramatic production. And I never shall forget where I first was hit with this in my dealing with people and my attempt to work with people. I said to a student of mine once, and I felt very deeply about him and for him because he was having a very rugged time. I said to him, as teachers of mine earlier had said to me when things were going fairly rough for me, "I think you're going to come through this. You've got the stuff in you to do it, And I believe in you, and I want you to know I believe in you, and I believe you're going to come through it. And he said to me, are you saying that because you really feel it? Or because you think it is the psychological thing to say that will get me through what I'm up against? He said, is that your face I am looking at, or is that a mask you are wearing? Is that you as a person, or is this a stance you have taken for an effect, an impression to make? Now this is, he was making the distinction between my person and my personage. Because all of us have person, carry about with us the clanking armor of a personage. We have certain roles that we perform, very natural roles. Father, mother, brother, sister. These are very natural roles. We have working roles, teacher, writer, fellow student, former teacher, former student. These are working roles that we perform. They grow up out of hard work. They represent the status that we achieve, our position, our rank, our seniority, our office holding, our institutional moorings, our representative commissioning. These are a part of our personage. We may wear this comfortably, we may wear it uncomfortably. We may be like Saul, we may get tired of this armor and wish for some slingshot carrying David to come along and wear it for us. Or we may be as he was earlier, jealous of it. But whatever our feelings about it are, this is our personage. It represents the identity that is ours and the work that we perform. And there is a great deal of our personage that is earned the hard way from having sweated out very difficult situations, from having survived in the competitive order of society. Wherever they come from, these personages mean a lot to us. We have a whole life investment in them. We quite often transfer them to objects about us in terms of the kinds of material things that we have: cars, houses, clothes, and so on. And we invest these symbols with personage security. We may even play a part in this role. Where we really should begin to be disturbed about our personage and our person is when we begin to split our very being as a person apart from our function as a functionary, as a personage. And there comes a rift in our own being in which we, as we say, go into our act. I shall never forget the person who taught me this, and mentally ill patients in a state hospital will see through your personage to who you are before most other people will. I remember one patient in particular who thought of me as a person who had been put there by the FBI to protect him because he thought he was the President of the United States. And I was one of the Secret Service men. I fitted into his drama. I did not go along with this. I'd say, no, I am not a Secret Service man. I am a minister. I am one of the chaplains here. This is who I am. No, 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 you have gotten me wrong. But I preached one Sunday, and he came up to the up to see me after the service and drew me aside and whispered. He said, I don't get it. I said, you don't get what? He said, I don't get why you were up there in that pulpit making speeches. He said, after all, you know, you're one of my bodyguards. And he said, I just can't understand why you would be preaching. He said, but I wanted to tell you that even though you aren't really a preacher, you put on a good act anyhow. Am I a phony? Am I just putting on an act? Or do we have that native desire to go back as a little child in a congregation where Paul Tournier, a Swiss psychiatrist, a French-speaking physician, who has had a great deal of work with the lay academies in Europe, and has been deeply impacted with the influence of these Christian lay groups of professional people. He has written this book, The Meaning of Persons, and he makes this distinction that I'm making here much better in this book than I do here. And I would heartily recommend this book to you as one that you can well have. It is a Harper publication, The Meaning of Persons by Paul Tournier, T-O-U-R-N-I-E-R. And he tells about going to church. He said, I have just been to a commemoration service in the cathedral where a packed congregation gave thanks to God, the protector of the city, and listened to the story of our redemption from invaders and the church's exhortation to authorities and citizens. As a Genevan, all this means a very great deal to me. The echoes of 1,000 childhood memories indelibly printed on my mind are aroused by the day's events. There is something here that is peculiar to our little country in which I was born, a country whose political life has always been bound up with its spiritual destiny. And yet a critical onlooker might well describe it as a conventional stage setting, with its personages, those members of the government sitting solemnly in their stalls, aware of the furtive glances in their direction by the crowd, all these people comporting themselves as they feel befits a great occasion, the preacher in his pulpit, with his exaggerated gestures and his voice carefully pitched. He takes care not to be too solemn, but at the same time his hearers would not be satisfied were he to speak to them as if he were chatting in the street. And suddenly, amid the hushed silence of the cathedral, a little child's voice was heard. Daddy, Daddy, who's that man talking up there? Doubtless it was the first time he'd been brought to church. He'd not been trained in the social conventions yet. His father is very embarrassed. Instead of answering his child in a quite natural question, his child's quite natural question, he whispers to him to be quiet. But around me, I catch one or two smiles, as if the child's spontaneity had in some way brought a welcome relief, as if a window had been opened and the fresh air allowed to blow in, where the weight of solemnity was beginning to be rather stifling. Who's that man talking up there? This little child wanted to cut through the personage to the person. Now, society gets sick when we are such functionaries that our working with people is simply the function of our personage. We're playing an act, performing a role, carrying out a duty. And two modern novelists have put their finger on this. One of them is J.D. Salinger, in his book Franny and Zooey. And the other one is Albert Camus, C-A-M-U-S, the French author who was killed a couple years ago in a tragic automobile accident. Camus says, "It is most tragic that some of the most important acts we perform are often the ones in which we ourselves are least involved." And you can take an example of Eichmann, who is the epitome of this. It was not I who did this. I was simply a functionary in an organization that made the decisions, and I was carrying out my role, and I killed all these people. And therefore, I am not guilty. And this makes as much sense to us as a little child saying to you, "I didn't do it, Daddy. My hand did it." You see the splitting of the person and the personage? And of course, Salinger calls this a phony. And this is an American word. It can't be translated very easily into other languages. You should see a group of foreigners try to translate that word into another language, a phony. There are legitimate dimensions to the personage, and the ambiguity of our life is that we do carry out certain roles and perform certain personage tasks, and they are necessary to our life together. And yet, the tragedy of our culture is that we can function irresponsibly as a personage in relation to our basic work with people as persons. Now then, that brings us to the third differentiation I wanted to make, and that is people. What is it that helps us to get through this ambiguity, to resolve some of this inevitable contradiction between our role and the reality of our relationships? It's that saving grace of discovering that persons are not persons really unless they are related to other persons. And they become in relation to each other a people of God. We who were no people have now become the people of God, 1 Peter says. And in our relationship to each other, we who were nobodies are now somebodies. Anna Freud, in her wonderful volume, War and Children, tells the story of the little children being evacuated from London during the bombing of London during World War II. And they incidentally learned that it was more damaging to the child emotionally to be separated from his parents when they were under stress than it was to hazard the bombs. And she tells a story in one of her writings that she was helping some little children back in the back country out of a bus. And she gathered one little 5-year-old boy down into her arms. And she felt that he looked particularly forlorn and particularly bedraggled, and so she held on to him a little while and gave him what every doctor and nurse has come to call TLC, some tender, loving care. And she told him what a fine-looking boy he was and how glad she was to see him and that she was his friend. And then she asked him, "Tell me who you are." And he said, "I guess I ain't nobody's nothing." I don't know who I am. Now, this is the condition of people, both in and out of the institutional structures of society of which the church is one. Who do not have a clear sense of their personhood because they have not a clear relationship to other people. Now, William James says that's one dimension of being people. Redemption should bring us into the peoplehood of God. That's one dimension. Another dimension is, well, what are we going to do about all this status and personage stuff that you've been handing us after you get into the church? If there's any place that it's more obvious than in the church, well, don't take us because we've had enough as it is. Well, William James said that there's not much difference between persons, but what little there is matters very much to them. Maybe too much. And the common denominator that we discover between persons and personages is that people are more distinctly human than otherwise. That we have more in common than the differences that separate us. You say, well, now, what do you mean by that? Well, I don't care what your status in society is and what my status in society is. There are 4 or 5 things that we have in common. We work. We eat. We sleep. We want to stay warm when it's cold, and we want to stay cool when it's warm. We sweat. Pain hurts the same way in your body that it hurts in mine. And Harold Wolff has taught us in his research in neurology that the difference between pain sensitivity is constant in all human beings. We, in our perception of pain sensitivity, make the difference. It is in the perception of pain and not pain itself that we're different as humans. And this is the thing that our Lord brought us, I think, in his very being. That he came with this tremendous personage of his. He, being in the very form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but he took upon himself the form of a servant and became obedient unto death. And that not just an ordinary death, it was the death of the cross. He partook of our common humanity. And as he looked out over the multitudes, he thrust aside all of the trappings of the stereotyped understandings of what a Messiah was, and looked upon the multitudes and was moved with compassion because they were like sheep without a shepherd, harassed and cast down, skinned alive as it were and cast down. These were people. And the fact that he was a Messiah, and the fact that the personages around him were high priests did not impress him nearly so much as the fact that these were persons for whom he was to die. And the Apostle Paul later said, "I determined no longer to see any man from a human point of view, but to see every man as a person for whom Christ died." My essential point is this, that is, in working with people, you and I must constantly be at the business of laying aside our personages and gaining entry into persons' lives as people like you and me. Whereas our role, our status, our identity has been hard earned, and we've sweated to get to the point that we are, we need to recognize that in working with people, it is only a card of introduction that gets us into relationship to people. And beyond that point, we are on our own as persons. Len Elder saw this so vividly once in talking with a brilliantly beautiful girl who's involved in the movie industry. And she told him that being beautiful was an asset only for a time, that it got you introduced to people. But from there on, You were on the same footing anyone else was. And however beautiful your role and your identity, my role and my identity may be, we must recognize that this is simply a card that gets us into relationship to persons. Persons, personages, people, folks like us, you and me. We have more in common. Then we are separated from each other. And I suppose conflict becomes its most crucially vicious when people who are so very much alike, basically, run into each other as personages. And we'll talk some more about these things at our next hour. Our time is up now.